Good afternoon, everybody. We are on our next edition of Workers' Compensation today. And we're going to be talking a little bit about the do's and don'ts of what to do when you've been hurt on the job. My name is Todd Bennett. Everybody else want to introduce themselves real quick?
Rod Ream.
John Ream.
And Roger Moore.
And we are the Ream Bennett Moore Ream Law Firm. And just to start this off, fellas, obviously we're going to talk about a lot of things about do's and don'ts. But to begin, when someone gets hurt, what is the number one thing immediately when somebody gets hurt that they should do?
Tell somebody.
And who are they going to tell? Who normally is, under the law, who's best to inform?
Probably a manager or a boss. Somebody particularly in a supervisory capacity, that's your legal obligation to do that. So, and not only do you want to tell somebody what happened, ideally you want to fill out an accident report, put down something in writing, and you want to do it right away, right after the injury, I think. A lot of our clients work afternoon shift, night shifts or weekend shifts, and you don't have managers around. I think texting is a great thing to do. Texting bosses or supervisors, telling them exactly what happened, what should I do? Because in some places people don't know where to go or exactly where to report. So, you know, tell your boss, tell your supervisor, and do it as soon as you can, do it in writing. And have a way where you can keep a record that you did make the report, because it's dealing with that issue right now. So
Rod, just for argument's sake, if it's an unwitnessed accident, which obviously we all know are highly contested, what should somebody do to kind of help prove their claim?
Well, some of the things that John just said are important. I mean, you need to communicate in a way that shows that you were hurt, because reporting is, you know, a natural thing to do. And keep track of the time, maybe talk with other co-employees and inform them about having been injured. So there's people that have heard that you got hurt, even though it wasn't witnessed. And actually, one of the best things that you can do, and actually, I was going to argue the first thing you should do is get medical care, frankly, to the extent if you need it, worry about the case later, get your medical care. But when you get your medical care, even if it's unwitnessed, I think you should tell the doctor what happened in detail and tell him it's work-related if you think it's work-related.
And that's a good point, Roger, because even though somebody could say they got hurt on the job, talk about a little bit about when you explain the injury to the first medical provider you see, but also the subsequent and the next doctor and physical therapist that you see about all your injuries.
Yeah, there's a couple of things to that, I guess. First of all, I think a lot of clients think, well, I did something and maybe I'll see if it works itself out. So I'll go home and then come back and see if it's okay. Although we prefer you report it exactly when it happened, if all you've got is to report it the next day, that's fine too. I mean, the sooner you report it after it happened, the better it will be for your case in general. But when you go see the first medical provider, whether it's somebody that the workers' compensation folks send you to or your own doctor, don't assume that they know anything about your injury. So you kind of have to start at square one to tell them exactly how you were injured, mention all of the body parts that hurt or that are affecting you, and do that for every provider that you see, because they may not communicate that information to the next specialist that you get sent to. And the other thing I guess I'll mention too, when you go into that provider, if you've had prior issues with this part of your body that's been injured, I think it's important to be upfront with the doctor about that from the get-go, because that helps with your credibility with the doctor. If after the fact they find out you had an injury to your low back 5 years ago and you never mentioned it to them, for sure the insurance company will use that as a reflection that you're not being honest, but it probably also affects your credibility with the doctor as well, that you never brought this to their attention. So don't be afraid to bring those things up so they have all the information they need to help you with your client.
And that's kind of a good thing that I was going to bring up is, what about this rule though? A lot of times we hear clients say, hey, they denied my claim because I didn't report it that same day. What is something that someone can do to actually, number one, factually help their case, but legally we all know that doesn't defeat a claim. So what should somebody do if they're told that?
Well, they should probably get a lawyer that knows what the rules are. If they're saying something like that, that you know, because workers' comp law isn't that strict, isn't that punitive for dates. I mean, basically the statutes say to inform the employer as soon as practical, and then they've got a duty to inform the court that an injury has occurred at the same time. So I think, but if a injured person gets that kind of a hard and fast, oh, it's too bad, Susan. There's too bad, too sad, you're out, you need to get help.
Yeah. And one of the things we were talking about, you know, make sure you describe your injury. A lot of times, John, can you explain, for example, like when we use body diagrams?
Yeah.
A lot of times somebody can Google that, print it off, but why do we use body diagrams when we report an accident or an injury?
Well, because we want to show the doctor where it happened, or a good way to show the court why the injury happens. Interestingly enough, I've dealt with employers who use the body diagram, and sometimes that body diagram doesn't match up with what a client says. So, I mean, you use the body diagram because it shows the doctor where it happens. And I think there's people where there's probably, and it's a practical term, there's sometimes it's very difficult. It's a lot harder to describe what actually happened, how somebody got hurt. I don't know with you, with the other three of you, but I've had clients where it takes me 15, 20 minutes to figure out what happened. You know, it's like, what part of your body's hurt? I mean, there's language barriers on Bolton, you know, really from the client sometimes. There's language barriers sometimes with treating doctors. So, I mean, drawing a picture is certainly helpful in reporting what happened.
Right. And many times we've all over the years used those body diagrams as a trial exhibit. For example, if an employer only writes up one hand, but yet on the body diagram, when they first were hurt, there's two hands and a shoulder. That those diagrams can show what they complained about immediately after the accident.
I was just going to say that I think we've all had cases where the employer lists one thing on the accident report, but the body diagram shows multiple other things that weren't documented. And as John indicated, even if you can't read and write English, you can sure draw on a body diagram where you have pain. And those can be important sources of information if there's a dispute about what was injured and how it was affecting somebody.
Yeah. Right. And Rob,
go back a little bit to describing the injury, if we could. You can have a workers' comp accident, an injury from just doing things repetitively. And we haven't talked about that much yet, but if your injury didn't happen like in an instant that you can say, well, it happened on April the 15th at 2:25 p.m. when I reached to get a cup of coffee and my shoulder went out. You know, life isn't that way. And if you have a joint, you know, and it happens to a lot of like hands, shoulders, elbows that get moved a lot, when you go to a doctor and get help, that's considered by the law to be an accident. And if you have that kind of case, you need to pay attention to the details so the doctors can be told how often you move things. I just talked to a guy today about a shoulder injury, and he worked at something that didn't seem very repetitive, but he basically worked on 500 pieces of equipment a day where he had multiple duties where he reached and bent his elbow and that sort of thing. And it makes sense that the elbow went out.
Very good. And what about this notion about as soon as practical, you should report your accident? That's the work keywords in the statutes that we go by. But one of the things about being reporting it as soon as practical also comes with the doctor choice. Can you explain that, Roger?
Well, you have the right in Nebraska to see your family doctor for an injury. And sometimes the employer will push you to an occupational doctor of their choosing even before you get that right given to you. So they can send you to somebody for an evaluation, but you should always follow up on your family doctor for this injury as soon as you can, realizing that sometimes you have to wait a week or longer to get in to see them. But that doesn't mean that you just go with whoever the work comp sends you. And again, when you get into each of them, for each doctor that you see, each new doctor, assume they don't know anything and tell them exactly what happened, what you injured, and what you're in pain for. So sometimes you get in a deal where you have an emergency treatment, you go to the ER, you're in the hospital a couple of days. After the hospital, after your release, you should go follow up with your family doctor at that point to get established with them.
And for example, John and Rod, just yesterday I met with a guy that indicates, as we all know, many employers in Lincoln will send someone to Concentra and say, you got to go there. You can't go anywhere else. You got to go to our doctor at Concentra. What should someone do in that scenario?
Call a lawyer. I mean, I'd say that halfway in jest, but I mean, you have the right to see your own doctor. Period. I mean, you're supposed to ask for a doctor choice form, which they're supposed to provide to you. The other thing why they will send you to Concentra is for a drug test. Usually a lot of places, like, you know, we'll go here to get drug tested. I think one thing to notice is, even if you're going to get drug tested, which I think is not always relevant, I think it's invasive, but, you know, whatever, just because you go someplace for a drug test doesn't mean you have to go there for treatment, you know? So I think if you get sent to Concentra for a drug test and maybe they get you in, you got to tell them what happened, but you got to ask for a gas to go see your own doctor. So
the employer has to do something to take your right to choose your doctor away from you. By law, they're supposed to give everybody a form that's like the equivalent of you have a right to remain silent in criminal law. Basically, there's a form that says you have a right to be treated by your family doctor if you have one, and please list the name of your doctor below. And if you don't list it, we can pick the doctor. And the insurance companies don't always do that process correctly. In fact, they don't always do it, period. So that's when John a minute ago said, if they tell you that you don't have any choice, you're going to have to fight for it, and you're going to have the knowledge of how to do it. And they probably haven't taken it away from you unless they give you that form that says those simple things. You have a right to go to your own doctor if you have one. And please tell us who that is. If they don't do that, you still have a right to see your own doctor.
Right. Can someone go to seek emergency room care?
Yeah, yes. There's always an exception to that, particularly at first, particularly for during the weekends, and particularly if it really is an emergency. I know insurance companies, if somebody goes to the emergency room multiple times, particularly if it's, you know, for treating pain, that can raise red flags with an insurance company. And sometimes you really are in pain. But particularly the first time you treat for an accident, yeah, go where it's convenient, particularly for truckers who are out on the road and maybe they live in Nebraska and they're hurt in Ohio. You're not going to be able to go to your family doctor if you get hurt on the road. So yeah, you go where you can get treatment.
Yep. And this question's for everybody, but let's say somebody didn't know their right to a family physician and the employer chose and they kind of got stuck in that protocol of going to who the employer sent them to. But then all of a sudden, for example, an MRI comes back and says they need surgery. What are somebody's options at that point? What can they do?
You can pick a surgeon to do to operate on you in Nebraska. You have that right regardless of whether or not your family doctor is the underlying doctor or somebody else is. I mean, if you're going to have an operation, a major surgery, which essentially means go under anesthesia, you have a right to pick who does that. And you should start talking with friends and neighbors about, you know, maybe who's done a good job for them if you need surgery. And once again, that may be time for you to talk to a lawyer. Probably would be if they're not honoring your choice. Because the court will make them honor your choice. You can take them to court on that. That's an absolute right that you have the right to pick the doctor that operates.
Does somebody have a right to the kind of the so-called second opinion that we hear about many times someone speak about? Is there such thing as a second opinion under the law, Roger?
Well, you have the right to seek a second opinion whenever you want, but as an employee or worker that's injured, you have to pay for that second opinion, or your attorney has to help you do that. The employer can send you to whoever they want you to send you to for a second opinion, you know, for the most part, whenever they want, and they've got to pay for that. But you don't have any independent right except for kind of a crappy court procedure to get a second opinion in very limited circumstances, which we'd never recommend. But one other thing I want to kind of expound upon too with the choice of doctor is that even if you don't have a doctor, a lot of us guys don't have family doctors we see on a regular basis. If your spouse does or your kids do, you can elect that doctor as your doctor for the work injury as well. So it's a little broader even than your family doctor to elect to see you for a work injury in Nebraska.
One of the things I kind of want to back up a little bit about is you kind of picked up on it, Roger, about describing an injury, about prior injuries. Just kind of share everybody a little bit about making sure you're accurate to your doctor about prior injuries and kind of describing the difference between a recurrence of what you may have had in the past versus just an aggravation and getting worse. How should someone go about telling the doctor about that?
Well, in Nebraska, the law is that so long as the injury contributes to, doesn't have to be the sole cause, doesn't have to be the major cause, so long as it makes it worse, it's covered under workers' comp. I mean, ultimately, I think it's a doctor's decision whether an injury is either a recurrence, which means it goes back to an older employer or before that, or an aggravation, which means it goes to a new employer or goes to the employer. But I mean, you just need to tell them that it hurts and where, and that, you know, it's just something that has been an issue in the past, but maybe it's worse now, or maybe you did something to make it bad. I mean, a lot of people have back pain. Well, you know, I've had back pain in the past, but, you know, let's say I was lifting, you know, bending down to pick up a patient and I felt it tweak, or maybe I felt it, the pain on a different side of my, you know, maybe instead of shooting down my right leg, it shot down my left leg, or, you know, like, describe maybe how the pain is different. Oh,
right. Anybody got any else thoughts on that? All right, moving on. One of the other issues that I kind of see many times, especially in the last few months, is we all have these age-old questions and fights about the insurance company will send you somewhere to a doctor. Your doctor provides restrictions, but the insurance company's doctor says you can work full-time. And then the employer comes back and essentially says you need to do your job full duty because our doctor said you can work. How does somebody kind of navigate that dilemma?
It's a tough spot. You know, two things are going to happen with that. One, if you don't return back to full duty with what the insurance company doctor says, oftentimes you could put your job in jeopardy and they might end up terminating you in an extreme case if you don't try that. There are different rules if you're, you know, say a member of a union, there might be a way to mediate that, but without that kind of union protection, it's a tough deal. You can certainly kind of die on the cross and refuse to return to work except with your doctor's limitations, but ultimately that issue when it comes to a court would be what the court views as the most appropriate restrictions is between those two. And if they side with the insurance company doctor, you're out of a job and may not have any repercussions, payment for the time off as well. So I always tell people in general, whether they're released to return to work at some point by the insurance company doctor or their own doctor, that you need to try it. And I think you have to realize that when you go back to work after being off work for a period of time, there's going to be a tough transition to get back into work shape in a lot of cases. And it's going to be painful. And there's some games that some employers play with, you know, testing the waters and trying to push you beyond your limitations and things like that. So that's, I think, where a lot of times we can come in handy to try and help navigate that return to work back. So we try and eliminate the likelihood that you would put yourself in a position where you might be terminated, while also trying to take into account your injury as much as we can and to document things as much as we can as well. But it's a tough deal. There's no easy answer for that situation.
It's even tougher when you bring in how long it takes to get the court to resolve that kind of an issue. In theory, you should be, if everybody agrees the worker was hurt and entitled to benefits, you could have a kind of an abbreviated hearing process that you call a motion, like say, judge, order them to follow my doctor's restrictions. Unfortunately, most of our judges want to have a full trial. They don't allow that brief motion period. So the full trial usually takes about 6 months from the time you file the court papers saying, I want my restrictions followed, to the time you get to court. It's part of the system that needs improvement.
Right. John, I was going to ask, does somebody have an opportunity for like the Nebraska Equal Opportunity Commission in that scenario?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, good question. It's probably, in a way, a physical injury in a way is probably better off. Yeah, I mean, the answer is yes. The law on disability, I mean, if you have a serious work injury where you're going to, where you've had a surgery or you've been off work any length of time, that's going to qualify as a disability, you know, particularly likely for the Americans with Disabilities Act. So, I mean, and if you get that, then long story short is, if you get into a job that's maybe somewhat above your restrictions, you have to be, I think, pretty specific about what is it about this job that you can't do, and you want to find ways to make it easier to do. For example, I've had a couple of clients worked in, you know, for lack of a word, book warehouses, and there's allegedly required to lift more than 50 pounds, but, you know, a lot of times use of a cart, they don't have to lift 50 pounds. A lot of times workers know how to change their own jobs or in order to make, in order to actually do their jobs. And the other thing is, even if you can't do that, you may be able to bid in to another job, particularly in a factory setting or a food, like a meatpacking setting. There may be jobs that you can try to do. But yeah, you got to try to work with them. And, but even under the law, they have to take your restrictions somewhat into account, particularly if they're based on a medical restriction. I know this isn't easy, but even with some of the packing houses, if you stick with it long enough, eventually they will, you know, maybe not concede, but yeah, maybe they'll put you in an easier job or reopen medical care and let you go back into the doctor. So you got to be persistent and try to work with your employer. Worst thing you can do is, yeah, probably walk off the job. That's not a good thing to do.
Two other options, I guess, that, you know, in that scenario that you have, you know, one, you can, if you've got vacation or sick time, you might consider taking that for a short period if you've got that available to give yourself some more time to heal. And the second option that you might have is to file for FMLA. It's unpaid leave. It's not a great option, but at least it protects your job for a short period of time. But, you know, the sad part about that is people can't afford to be out of work and not have any money coming in. So that's that's again, not one of those great options, but it's an option to try and protect your job for a short period of time at least.
Right. Just real quick, the kind of the next issue that I had is many of us, we get denied claims. How does somebody get medical care if their work comp claim's been denied? What are some of their options?
If they have health insurance through a spouse or even their own, health insurance requires those the care to be paid for if they can establish that workers' comp is denying it.
Right.
And that's one way, and probably the best way, because there the other remedies are like Medicaid through the state that's based on low your income status. If your income is beneath a certain level, you can qualify for Medicaid. And Medicaid pays way less than health insurance and workers' comp. And so I think sometimes it's hard to get quality care on Medicaid, as good a quality care.
And a lot of times we have people who, for example, and not to point them out, but like Nebraska Orthopedic and several others will say that they're not going to process under health insurance up to 30, 60, 90 days because they need a specific denial from the work comp carrier. How does somebody go about to do that?
Well, a couple of ways, I guess, that, you know, one, if you've got a letter from the adjuster saying they denied your claim, that should take care of it. One of the other common ways is if you've got an attorney and you file a petition in court, the insurance company is going to hire their attorney to file a response to that. And generally, just about everything they file indicates they're denying the claim. So you can use that as well as an indication that the claim has been denied. One other thing to kind of follow up on the health insurance aspect, you know, if you're working for a company and they deny your claim and you end up losing your job because of it, you do have potentially the Affordable Care Act that you can follow up on and get health insurance through the Affordable Care Act, but you've got to do it within, I think, it's either 30 or 60 days from the end of your health insurance coverage. So that is kind of a safety net for some people to have health insurance in the event that they lose their job and their health insurance as a result of a work injury.
Gotcha.
There's also free COBRA right now through the latest stimulus package where you can stay on your employer's health insurance free of charge without having to go on to the exchange. You know, there's workers that can get that starting. If you're separated after April 1st, you can enroll in COBRA for free, you know, which is
You kind of went out, Raj. What'd you say?
I was asking how long the COBRA coverage lasts under that.
I can tell you until the end of October. So, okay. You know, great. So, or you wouldn't have
that's
to
pay out for it. So, and then let's say on those denied claims that they actually managed to get medical care through their health insurance carrier, and then they're subject to maybe deductibles and co-pays, but they got balances that remain unpaid. We obviously know about a bill that our office was instrumental in getting through for the prohibition of no debt collection. What is owed?
It's your turn to answer a question.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I was just asking the questions. But
it's quarterback run.
Yeah, you know? But generally speaking, yeah, the statute allows us to provide a notice about the work comp claim that is pending in the comp court, and just the date of service, the amount of bill, and the body part, and the employer, and put the provider and a collection agency on notice. And once you prove that they've had notice, then yeah, it can stop all debt collection, at least until your compensation claim is decided or reaches a final adjudication, which we've all been in that scenario where we had to defend and take care of and deal with bills that just aren't getting paid.
There are all sorts of tricks for it. So yeah. It's a lot simpler with this procedure.
Right. Well, the thing to remember about that too is the case has to be on file with the court. So if they've just denied the claim and you've got bills outstanding, they can go through collection actions with you and try to collect on those balances until there's a matter on file with the court you can document and send to the collection agency. But even in those situations, I always recommend try and pay the provider something, you know, $5-$10 a month, if you can afford to do that, just to kind of put them at ease a little bit. They'd much rather deal with somebody who's making some payments on the claim than nothing. But under this law, you don't have to do that anymore, even if you've got a pending action.
Right. And we've all talked about medical case managers in the past, but I've had a couple situations with three clients just in the last month where a medical case manager be assigned to someone's claim and they're rescheduling medical appointments just for the sole purpose so they can attend them. Just general, all three of you kind of describe what somebody's options and whether that's appropriate, and what can someone do in that scenario?
Well, there's a lot of things you can do. And one of them is to try, make a record of an email or a text or something that you don't want the nurse case manager in the room with you to the insurance company and ask them not to have them attend. You can talk to your doctor about it and say that you really aren't comfortable having a stranger in the room during an examination. You can get a lawyer. When we get one, we usually write a letter to the nurse case managers and try to establish some ground rules, and then they tell them they can't talk to our client without going through us and some things like that. But the whole idea of the nurse case manager being in the room with the doctor is, you know, more or less illegal. It's not sanctioned by the Nebraska workers' compensation law unless there's a certain kind of coverage that the nurse case manager is a part of, and that is not very common. It's called I can't think of the term.
Managed care.
Yeah, managed care. And that's very, very uncommon.
Well, under the Nebraska Workers' Comp Act statute regarding medical care, the court has pretty broad powers to dictate how medical care is given. And I think that if you asked and showed some facts about how this is inconveniencing you, you could get the court to get that, you know, to order the nurse case manager to stop doing that. So under 48-126, which gives the court a lot of power to regulate how medical care and work injuries is actually given. So.
Right. And then to just kind of finish this up, another little pet peeve that kind of happened this week was a case manager and the adjuster is requiring injured workers on this particular employer that they can only do their physical therapy sessions after work on their own time. How does someone deal with that situation?
Both with this question and the previous one, I think direct contact with the nurse case manager and the adjuster is probably the best approach. And I would tell the adjuster that they don't have any authority to reschedule appointments, and I would try and follow up with the doctor's office as well to let them know that we think they don't have any authority to reschedule appointments, and it does nothing but lengthen the period of time for the recovery for the injured workers. But it's the same with the other, you know, you just kind of let them know that this is not appropriate. You're not going to deal with it. And if necessary, I think you have an opportunity to file a motion with the court to restrict the case manager's involvement. You know, the injured worker doesn't have to spend their free time going to physical therapy just because it might be inconvenient with the doctor's, with the employer's schedule. You know, they're time to do physical therapy for that, in my opinion. So it's right. You know, closest available and whenever it is available. And if that's during the workout, it is.
Very good. Well, gentlemen, we've reached that point where we got to conclude. Does anybody have any closing thoughts?
No.
All right. Hearing none, as they said in Hill Street Blues.
Hang on.
Go out there.
I've got one last thing.
No more jokes, Roger.
I was reading an article the other day that the police arrested a dog that was giving birth on the side of the road. Apparently she was littering.
Oh, geez.
Puns are funny, but not all puns.
I thought that was pretty good.
All right, gentlemen, very good. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you.
You bet.